You're listening to Power Pearls Podcast, intuitive, purpose-driven yarn crafting to empower your knits and pearls. Before we get going with this episode, I just want to hop in here really quick because I know that you find value in each and every one of these episodes, and I know hearing them means a whole lot to you. So I actually want you to take this a step further. I want to invite you to become part of a special movement, of a community of other seekers on their yarn crafting path, just like you, who wish to learn, grow, and empower themselves as makers, knitters, and creators, and lift others up in the process. So, you know that quote, a rising tide lifts all boats? I firmly believe that we all have the power to help benefit each other, one person at a time, and stitch by stitch, I'm here to help you empower your knits and pearls from the inside out. So I would love for you to check this out, to see what the community is all about, because I know it's going to make a difference and it's going to transform your own yarn crafting journey. So visit powerpearlspodcast.com/community and get details as well about a special gift that I'm offering when you join the community by May 10th. All right, so on to the episode, and I hope you enjoy. Hey, Power Pearlers, welcome to another episode of Power Pearls Podcast. I am super excited because I am joined by Françoise Danois, and she is a returning guest. Now, I think it's three times. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off by sharing a little bit about Françoise. If you have never heard of her, which would be crazy because she's everywhere. She's amazing. So she is from Aroha Knits. Aroha Knits is her company. She's a knitwear designer and a coach, and she inspires and empowers fiber artists to transform their yarn so they can manifest Aroha. Did I say that right?
Aroha, yeah.
Aroha. Oh my gosh, I did it. One stitch at a time. And she's passionate about creating meaningful and fulfilling work. She's shaken up the industry and the fiber community and serving as a catalyst for transformative impact. Wow. There's more to that bio. But you know what, Françoise, I just want to say hello and welcome.
Thank you for having me back on the show. Yeah, I'm always so happy to be returning back here.
Yeah. I was going to say welcome back. So before we dive in, we got a lot to talk about because we're also going to be talking about the Knitter's Planner. That's kind of the buzz that's going on this month now that we're back in full force with Power Pearls Podcast. But before we go into that, I just want you to share a bit about yourself, kind of, you know, jump off where I left off and just share a little bit with the audience about you.
Yes, I can do that. Actually, I'm going to pull up my bio so I can just read, have a little jumping point off of
sure.
that. But yeah, so I consider myself, and like if you've like not new to the show, like you've been listening, you've heard me previous times, my bio has definitely been updated a little bit since we last talked, because I've definitely had like a lot of journeys of self-discovery and stuff like that. So I consider myself a Takatāpui Maori artist. And Takatāpui, first of all, is the, I guess I first should say, explain what Maori is. So who the Maori are, and they are the indigenous people of New Zealand. Growing up, I was very disconnected from my cultural heritage, from my mother's side. And so I've been using knitwear design as a way to reconnect to that cultural side of me. So I've been really trying to step into that identity of being Maori, and instead of saying like a knitwear designer, I like to consider myself an artist first of all, and I use knitwear design as my medium for creating and sharing my art. And then the Takatāpui part is basically the Maori word for queer, or you know, gender fluid and all that stuff. Like, and I came across that term like a while back, and I was like, okay, I need to reclaim this word in, you know, using the Maori word instead of like the English word for it. So yeah, that's what I consider myself. And so in knitwear design, like I said, I'm really tapping into my culture heritage to share the stories of my people, my mother's people, my ancestry and my heritage with the knitting community as a whole, basically transforming the myths, legends, and other stories into stitches, and also connecting them to the story of why we make. So the reason why I make, what I design, is a form of self-discovery, self-care, self-expression, and selflessness. And so while I'm designing and creating patterns, that's something I really want my audience to be mindful of when they create as well, because I believe that knitting is more than just knitting, basically. And so by sharing the reasons why I create, I hope to inspire them to really think about why they create.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Yeah. So talking about your culture and kind of going beyond, you know, the designer aspect and talking about, you know, yourself as an artist and how this is a way to express that in your culture. I am thinking about a recent pattern that you shared on Instagram, and I am sorry, I forget the name of it, but it's a beautiful neckerchief. And you refer to it, or you say it's like the way Maori carved wood, like a carved mm-hmm. wood look. So can you just share that as one example of how you would tell a story about your culture through one of your designs?
Yes. So that design in particular, a really popular one. I was really surprised by how many people like really liked it. That is called the Whakaero. Whakaero is Maori wood carving. So if you've ever been to New Zealand and gone to the meeting houses or just seen like the canoes and stuff like that, you see those really intricate wood carvings. And being a wood carver is a really respected role in the Maori community. And, you know, and it's a way for people to share their stories. It's a form of storytelling. And I found myself, like, even though I'm not a wood carver, I use knitting in a very similar way, you know, using the medium to tell the stories of our people and to also carry forward the values and experiences, you know, to help keep going forward so the stories aren't forgotten. And for that particular stitch pattern that I used, it was actually from a Japanese stitch dictionary that I have, but the way the twisted stitches paired out, it just reminded me of wood carving. So sometimes I'll look at stitches and say, like, this has that same feeling as the really deep textures in the wood and stuff like that. And I was like, I want to transform this into a design to tell this particular story, just as an homage to wood carving.
Yeah, I really think that it does sort of speak to this, you know, look of wood carving. So I definitely got that feeling for sure. Yeah. So it's definitely a beautiful piece.
Thank you.
So aside from the culture aspect, let's talk about you, the person. Mm-hmm. So how does your own personality play into your brand as well? Because, you know, you're in your photos, you know, you're a big part of your brand. So can you talk a little bit about how that works?
That's a really good question. So myself as a person, I play into my branding?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
I think whatever I'm doing online, I always try to remember my number one value, which is to spread Aroha. Aroha is my middle name. And so that's where the whole my brand name came from. And Aroha is Maori for love, empathy, and compassion. So whatever I'm doing online, I always try to remember, am I acting in the spirit of spreading out, am I uplifting the community? And sometimes, you know, I'll talk about really heavy stuff. Like, you know, I've become much more vocal about, you know, talking about representation, inclusion, you know, and even racism, which can be negative topics, but I always try to put a spin of like, how is this going to uplift the community in some way? So even though it's not like happy and rainbows and positivity, I'm always thinking about how is this going to enrich people's lives and lift up the community. So that's kind of like how my personal self kind of plays into my branding, you know, mm-hmm. that number one value, basically.
So, and what is the biggest question that you get about your designs and your culture?
Biggest question that I get.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
No, it's actually
pauses are classy Francoise. No, I know. I just threw this one in there. This was
No, because the question that I get that I noticed, they kind of fall along the lines of, like, the other day, I got this message. I was like, what a Maori. And I'm like,
What a Maori?
What are Maori?
Oh, and what are Maori? Gotcha.
Yeah. So, like, you're like, who are these people that you've been talking? Like, what is this? And I'm just like, okay, it looks like we need to do a little basic geography in here. Or sometimes I'll get, so in my recent photos, I have been using Ta Moko in some of my photography. And the Ta Moko is basically like the facial tattoos. If you're familiar with the Maori culture, you'll see that pop up a lot, and it's very, and I recently got a stencil kit for that, because I was talking to my mother about it, and she's like, if you're going to do the black lipstick, you need to have, like, you know, the moko on there as well. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll get it. But whenever I put it on, people are like, I hope that's not a real tattoo. And I'm just like, you just wait.
Yeah, really? Well, that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just like, oh, wait, that's my next question, and you already beat me to it. But that is, I mean, that right there, it just speaks your culture, this tattoo. Yeah. So tell me, so what is the story behind this tattoo on your chin? Is that like a typical thing that you see, like, in the Maori culture?
Yeah, so it is, it's changed a little bit now, in that the younger people getting it are getting younger and younger. But before, it was a sign of identity when you got to, like, a certain age, like the elders would get it. And it was just basically, but a sign of who you are, what tribe you come from, your social status, your occupation, just basically like a unique thumbprint that kind of just tells your story of who you are. And I recently found out that it doesn't always necessarily have to be on the chin. For women, it's on the chin. For men, it's usually a full facial tattoo. But I recently was watching a video from a Maori author, and she was talking about how she got her Ta Moko. And hers was on her arm. I think just on one arm, on her right arm, that kind of, like, spread onto the hand. And the reason why it was there is because she is an author. She writes, she uses her hands. And so the Ta Moko is very unique and special to the wearer. So I think in that case, it felt more appropriate for her to have it on her arm, because it was a better representation of who she was. But nowadays, people are getting it, and they don't, you know, not at like a certain age, but they're getting it younger and younger, not only as, you know, for, you know, as a way to identify and share their stories, but also as a way to preserve the culture and to say, you know, our culture was almost eradicated years ago, but we're still here, and we're going to reclaim parts of our culture that was people tried to wipe out at one point.
Oh, wow. So the one on your chin, does that have a story? Is that you? Because you mentioned it's like a thumb. No, okay.
No, not this one. The stencils usually don't, because, you know, there are stencils that multiple people can use. So, yeah, not in this particular case. So I want to be aware of.
Okay. No, it's very intriguing. So I want to have throw in a controversial question. Why not?
Sure.
Because you know, I mean, why not? And it makes things more interesting. But, you know, right now there's a lot of conversation going on Instagram about people of color and how, you know, just that plays into fiber arts and creativity in general. So being a person of color, how is the knitting world, the design world, the fiber world, how do you feel like that tide is turning, and how that's having an influence, the conversations, how are those conversations having an influence on this topic?
Well, the conversations have definitely been really difficult, especially right at the beginning. Like every week, somebody would say something just absolutely terrible, and we're just like, I'm exhausted. We need to take a break. But I think things are getting a lot better now, because people are really listening, they're taking the time to educate themselves. And yarn companies, companies in the fiber industry are making positive changes and seeing how they can be more inclusive. And I know in my case, I've been able to have a lot more opportunities open up to me, for sure, which I've been really grateful for. So it's hard work, and the work is never going to end. This is like ongoing process, not like, you know, oh, one time done, you know, racism was solved. This is like an ongoing process. And so once we've started, we, you know, we can never go back. And I don't think the conversations are going to really, you know, air quotes, die down. But it's from what I've seen, it's having a really positive impact for, you know, making people of color feel much more safe and much more included in the community. So it's been tough and exhausting, really emotionally exhausting. I know that some of my friends that they've just been like wiped out by all these conversations. But all in all, it's making the community a lot better.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a positive then, you know, and yeah. I just wanted to, because I'm thinking about how, you know, my experience with this and what it was like, you know, 10 years ago, or, you know, when I was an editor of Creative Knitting, and I would get in, like, it's so different because we are our brand, our face is our brand. So I could see why this is very, kind of, you know, in the forefront, you know what I'm saying? Because when I was the editor, I would just see submissions and proposals, and all I would see would be drawings, photographs of designs. I wouldn't know necessarily the person behind the design until I decided, oh yeah, that's a great design. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I didn't know, like there was no, I was looking at the merit of the design of the, you know, this is a beautiful piece that I want to have in the magazine. So it was like this, the color of that, the person's skin color didn't come into play. It was like their design is what was the most important thing. And then after that, then maybe I would know more about the person. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I think that that was a unique, oh gosh, that was just, it was just different, you know? And now, because we are our brand and we are out there, I think that makes it so much more important for us to really be sensitive and aware of that when we're communicating our message. Don't, I mean, right? I mean, would you say that that's where the difference is now more than it was, you know, 10 years ago?
I wasn't around 10 years ago, well, okay. So I wouldn't know.
Okay, five years ago, you were still on Instagram. But, you know, for me, because I guess because I do come from that world from the beginning, was like, it was a different kind of a world, and it wasn't online, and it wasn't as inclusive. Well, I shouldn't say inclusive. My gosh, I don't want to say, here we are having these hard conversations in mouth, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think, but it's just like now, I think it is very important because of the fact that we are the face of our brand. Mm-hmm. Most of us.
Yeah.
Would you agree that that's, yeah for sure. Okay. So, yeah,
oh, sorry. Can I add
go ahead.
Thinking about that. There was one yarn dyer, Ocean by the Sea. She was talking about how when she was first starting out, she would just have photos of her yarn and people would just assume that she was a white dyer until she started putting, sometimes she would just put her hand in there and then people were like, oh my gosh, you're not white and stuff. And so it was just kind of like, you know, that assumption that people of color didn't exist in these spaces. But now it's just showing that the important, like a lot of, I know just reading through some of these stories, like a lot of people of color would intentionally hide themselves from, you know, not put themselves in the camera, not even show their hands because they were afraid of, you know, getting, you know, flack for that.
I never thought that, you know, I would never think, but you're right. It's always going to be work, you know? I mean, yep. You know, I think back to even way back, you know, watching, you know, the riots, you know, in Alabama or, you know, down South, and, you know, people would think, oh, you know, we've moved so far from that, but really comes back. It keeps, you know, history repeats, things keep circling, going around in circles. And that's, you know, there's always going to be that work. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, on to the next topic. I just thought, let's open up one of those hard conversations. So I'm going to circle back and ask you about what you're doing, you know, because I know you have a membership, you have lots of really cool things happening. And we've been, you know, since we stopped, because we used to work, you know, do coaching together. So I feel out of the loop. I really have to know what's going on with you. But I want to first ask you about a design you're working on for the Knitter's Planner. So like this, yeah, this is exciting. because this month is all about the Knitter's Planner. And you are working on a cowl design. And so I wanted to ask you, for number one, like the inspiration behind the design. I know that I asked you specifically for a color work design. And I wonder if the one that you, the motif that you came up with is, you know, what inspired that? And, you know, what fascinates you about working with color work?
So whenever it comes to color work pieces, so I guess I'll just share a little bit of a story. So story time, everybody.
Okay.
So this actually goes all the way back to when I first started to learn how to knit. I remember sitting down with my first piece. It was a cowl that was knit in the round with some really chunky yarn. My mom was teaching me how to knit. And as I was sitting down, I immediately had this vision of me working on a color work piece that really drew heavy influence from motifs that I found in the Maori culture. Because in Maori culture, there's a lot of geometric designs that they use, especially in weaving and things like that. And I was like, oh, that would be really cool to translate that into knitting. So when I was working on that very first piece, I was like, I'm going to learn how to do color work, and I'm going to learn how to create my own designs. So that way I can start making my own pieces. So whenever there's an opportunity to do color work that pops up, I immediately go to my cultural background. And I draw a lot of heavy influence from taniko, which is traditional weaving. And in taniko, like I just mentioned, there is a lot of geometric motifs, which makes it really easy to translate into color work patterns, whether it's mosaic, intarsia, or stranded knitting. Stranded knitting is my favorite type
of color
work.
What is the name of that? Sorry, with a T?
Taniko.
And you're going to have to send me these terms, all these things that we're talking about, so I can include them in the show notes.
Okay, I'll send you an email.
You're going to have to. Okay.
Yeah. And also, recently, I actually did learn how to do taniko, the actual weaving, so I can do both in knitting and in the woven form as well, which was really exciting to do. But when you asked me to do the design for the Knitter's Planner, and it was a cowl and it was color work, I was like, oh, I know exactly, you know, where to draw my inspiration from. I'm always trying to find ways to bring these motifs into my knitting. And for this particular, for this design, because we had to work on two pieces stitch motifs, I went back to one of my favorites, which is called the Pa Tiki Tiki. The Pa Tiki Tiki is basically the flounder fish. And actually, I wrote a note about here, a little background on it, but it is a significant symbol that is featured in lots of marae, which is the which is called the meeting houses, but also really common in taniko. And it basically represents abundance and is seen as fuel for the brain, mind, imagination, and dreams, because the flounder fish was a main source of food. And so obviously, you know, they want to give thanks to and honor, you know, such a source of nourishment. So for that design, I did two takes on it. There's like the traditional Pa Tiki Tiki motif, which it's kind of just like this very simple diamond. And then I kind of did like an inverse version of it. So they're both the same motif, but just two different takes on it. But they're noticeable by the main dominant diamond motif.
Wow. That is a really cool story.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea. And that would be really awesome to include a little bit of that in the Knitter's Planner or...
Oh yeah, I should mention that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When you write your pattern, I'm sure you'll just put a little bit about that. That's a great story. Oh my gosh. And when I see this, when I saw your design come through, I thought, you know, it's you. Like I could see you on it. You know what I'm saying? Because it was just so inspired by, you know, just similar to other designs. And it almost reminded me of the wood carving look a little bit, like it could almost feel like that. So could you talk a little bit, let's talk a little bit more about the, you know, the actual construction. So it's a cowl, but it's like a tube, right? Because, you know, with the color work, you got to hide because it's stranded color work, right? Right. So to hide all those loose strands. So funny, the first time I made a stranded color works, I made a sweater. Like, and it was ridiculous. It was for a little girl. I won't go into that story. I had no idea what I was doing. Like what? So it's a tube, so you can hide the color work. So it's reversible technically because it's one tube. So is that, can you tell me a little bit about the, construction there beyond the tube?
Yeah. So basically, like you said, it's a tube. You just knit in the round for as long as you want it to, and then you connect the two ends together. So basically, so with stranded knitting, if you were just to knit it like a regular cowl, not like a huge tube, it's already kind of like double layered because you have the main motif, but then also the yarn floats at the back. With this construction, you're getting like quadruple because you have the two edges and then the two sides of the yarn floats together. So it's like extra cozy for the winter, basically. And
nice.
So it's really easy to adjust the length and stuff like that. Like the most challenging part of it would be the Kitchener stitch to, you know, sew the two ends together. But once that's done, it's basically just like looks seamless. And yeah, it's a lot of fun too.
Well, and you know, with the Kitchener stitch, once you get the hang of it and you get into the rhythm, you know, it's pretty easy. But because you've got the color work, you want to just make sure you don't pick up the wrong color, so it doesn't sort of look seamless and flow into the other, you know, into the motif the right way. So that's the only thing, right, that you probably have to kind of watch out for when you're doing it. Well, great. So now these, you know, the actual motifs, they could be like someone could just play around, right? If they wanted to like do a standalone, because you were going to do stitch blocks. And then I mentioned you didn't have to. I don't know why, but I was thinking I might even play around with them myself. So you were going to send, and I guess when you're done with the pattern, unless you have, are those stitch patterns ready? Could you, I'm kind of asking you this like right here publicly on the podcast, but could you send those to me so I could create, maybe we could create the stitch blocks here? Cause I know since you're sending everything from Japan, because I was thinking, so you're doing this in Sweet Georgia Tough Love Sock, right? So that's a fingering weight yarn. And so I was thinking of doing the stitch blocks, cause there's two stitches, right? Did I already ask you that? There's two, right? And I was thinking of maybe doing them in like a worsted weight, like a Barocco worsted weight, just to see like how it looks in the heavier yarn. Do you think that's, do you think that's doable?
Oh yeah. So you're basically asking for the charts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can send those over.
Yeah. That's what I'm sorry. I didn't say it that way. My bad.
No,
that would be cool. Cause I want to play around with those. And because what we're doing is, you know, we're including stitch blocks. And I think I mentioned this to you, Francoise, but, so like on the weekly spreads in the planner, so we're including these stitch blocks, all going to be about 8 by 8 inches so that, you know, knitters can play around with these, learn how to use them, you know, in different ways. Maybe they can customize their own, designs, you know, maybe they can make bag, or they can make a, you know, like a, I don't know, a rug, whatever. So that's kind of the idea, you know. So there's like learning every single week, you know, so that they can also kind of play around with the project planning pages, and there'll be a page where they can actually learn how to use, you know, these blocks in special ways. Awesome. So now I'm going to ask you a little bit about your own planning systems, because I thought, hey, you know what? It's all about the knitter's planner. It's all about, you know, creating this, like, you know, turning this into your own personal thing. Because I think planning is a personal thing. Totally. You know, we all have our own way. So what is your own planning system of choice? Are you a digital kind of girl, or do you like the pen to paper, or would you say that you're like definitely like a hybrid of both?
So I use a planner for my day-to-day activities when I really need to figure out, okay, this is what I'm doing today. But I use a digital planner. Actually, I use Asana, which is a project management tool for like my big overarching projects that, you know, take about weeks, months, even like the full year, just to make sure that helps me kind of have that big picture overview of everything that's going on. And then when I need to break things down, that's when I use my daily planner and write things out.
That's great. You know, I love Asana. Oh my gosh. Oh, it's the best. I don't know what I did before it. So what would you say that your planning style says about your own personality?
I think I like to think that I'm organized. I guess it means about my own personality. Like I'm organized. I'm on top of everything, and I get stuff done.
Mm-hmm. So, good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so, because this was a question that came up recently, I was talking to Stephanie and we were like, planning, you're putting together your planner, how you plan, how you, write your to-do lists, or do you prefer to see things like in a timeline, or do you like to use mark? You know what I mean? That's one part of it, but it's like when it comes to planning, like, it's almost like a thumbprint in a way. That's not really the right way to say it, but everyone has a nuance. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I just thought maybe I'd ask that, if you have like sort of a quirky, fun kind of way that you like to write in your planner. But I think you said it pretty well. So we'll just go with that.
Yeah. I also use a planner. It's called I forgot the name of it, but I like the way that the planner is set up because it has like a day, like for every day of the week. And then there's like a weekly review. And at the beginning, you can also plan out your month and have an overview of the month and then write down your goals and stuff like that. It's like really detailed and gets really in depth with things. So I guess that's kind of like my quirk. Like I like to get in depth. Oh, I like to assess things a lot, see what I did over the week, what I could do better, what I did well and stuff like that. So if you took a look at the planner that I use, then that would have a good indication of what I'm like, I guess.
Are you talking about the Full Focus planner?
Yes, that's it. Full Focus.
Okay. Yeah. And so the Knitter's planner is not out yet, but yes, that is my planner of choice currently. I've been using it for the past, couple of years. And so I love the principles in there, so it's like, I think it's great to share the love and pay forward all these exciting, all these different kinds of methods out there. Really, that's what it is. And, I know Michael Hyatt, who created the Full Focus Planner, some of the concepts that he uses, they've been used by other people, and they'll be used by, the Knitter's Planner will probably use some of those as well. So it's like we borrow elements and then, like he put together a system based on the way he plans. You know what I mean? So it's like he created the thing that he needed. So it's like, that's the thing that we're doing with the Knitter's Planner. There's this, there are planners out there for knitters, but they're not, we notice they're not that extensive. There's not quite enough out there. And, we're going to be working on, some elements that are more custom that knitters can, kind of create their own, look and feel, to a great degree. So anyway, I'm really excited that you're a part of this. So thank you so much. Okay. So let's wrap it up. And I want you to talk about what's going on, what you're doing right now. So you've got a membership club, you always have something going on. So can you talk a little bit about, this is your time to promote what it is that you're doing and the kind of programs that you're offering right now?
Yeah, sure can do. So one of the things this year I really wanted to focus on was simplifying my business and really making the most out of the time that I have. So last year I was doing like a quarterly magazine and pattern collections and stuff. And I just found that was just too exhausting, taking too much of my time. And I didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted to. So it was a good experiment, but I'm just going back to single pattern releases and that's working very well for me. And because of that extra time, I've been able to really focus on really scaling my knitwear design program, which I call the Swatch Studio Circle. And I've been doing some changes to it. So I, it was originally a membership, but now I'm just really focusing on lifetime enrollments basically. But that's my signature program, teaching people how to create publish worthy designs. For aspiring and beginner designers, it's like your one-stop shop for everything that you need, like education, resources, mentorship, coaching, community, things that you need to become a successful designer in whatever way, shape, or form that you define success to be.
So is this in a membership format? Is that what it is? Can they get like a monthly membership or how does it work?
So I originally tested out the membership format, but I found that I didn't like that as much. So they will get new content on a monthly basis, but now I'm just really focusing on just doing a, one-time lifetime enrollment fee.
Mm-hmm. And then they have access. So then they do a one-time enrollment fee and then they have access to like a platform that has all of this content. And then you continue to add to it. Is that kind of what you're doing at this point? You're adding to that. Okay. So how can people learn more about the program, or, just to get everything that you're doing?
So I guess the first step would be downloading the roadmap. I have a PDF that kind of gives an overview of the system that I teach. Let me see. I'll have to send you the link to it later on.
Okay. No, that's fine. Then it'll be in the show notes. And then in the outro, I will mention it. No problem. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good starting place for people. If they want to learn how to get into network design, they can start with this PDF. And then later on, they have the option to watch my free masterclass, which goes into a little bit more depth. But, you know, it's about 60 minutes. And that will also give them more information about the program and all that.
Well, that's great. So anywhere else people can find you before we say goodbye?
Yeah, so I think the first place most people would know me from is on Instagram. So Instagram, I'm over there at Aroha Knits. I also have a Facebook group called the Fiber Muse Circle. And I do have a second Facebook group called the Yarn Alchemist Community or Hangout or something like that. I forgot the name I gave my own Facebook group, but I'll give you all the links for that as well.
Great.
And also, then you can also find me on Ravelry at Aroha Knits and also my website, arohaknits.com.
That's great.
I try to make things easy.
Oh, it's fine. No, it's all good. So this was great. Thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you again for having me on.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Françoise, also known as Frenchie. You know, she shared some links in the episode, so I'm going to give you some of the details here. So again, as Frenchie said, the best place probably to start is on her website, because it's very clear once you get there, you'll know where to go next. So that's Aroha Knits, and you can learn about her signature program, the Swatch Studio Circle, and also how to get in on the action and join her Facebook group, the Fiber Muse Circle. And also she's on Instagram at Aroha Knits is her handle. So you should totally check those places out. And also next week, the bonus episode that I did with her goes live in the community. And you also can get your hands on a special gift that she's offering. You get instant access to a masterclass that she has created. So you can learn more about how to watch the bonus episode and get this masterclass by going to powerpearlspodcast.com/community. All right, you guys. So that's it. It's a wrap, and I will see you next time.